welcome to Minute 16 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob. Oh, wait a second. Where's Tom? Oh, I just found out that Tom's in the cooler this week. And unfortunately, the Wi-Fi doesn't work there because they're having technical difficulties. So just be me this week as your host. And joining me today is Todd Liebenau of the Forgotten Filmcast. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
I'm glad you weren't sent to the cooler this week, too.
You know, I came close, but, I got a little too close to the wire, but I thought better of it, so yeah.
As long as you didn't send out any raspberries, to the guards, you should be fine.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you gotta pick your moments, so.
That's very true. Well, episode 16 starts off with a guard looking back and forth while in the tower. Checking out the prisoners in the camp, and it ends with Danny scratching his head. This is a very interesting minute, because basically, for anyone who was listening last week, which hopefully it was all of you, we just had the point where Hilt's taking a look, and he found the blind spot, and he wants to try and check it out. The minute starts off with the shot of the guard looking back and forth, and we've discussed in the past the fact that the guards don't look overly thrilled to be here.
Well, who would,
Yeah, but they're not at the Russian front.
I guess. I suppose that's the bright side. But, it's kind of like, one of the, I guess just sitting there in a watchtower for something to maybe happen. It's like, you remember the opening of Laverne and Shirley, where they used to just sit there and watch the bottles go by and the Schatz Brewery, and then, they entertain themselves by sticking a glove on top of one of the bottles as it goes by. It's like, it's got to be a job like that where you're just waiting for something interesting to happen.
Yeah, but the bottles of beer are not going to aim bad at you.
Oh, I suppose they could, but, yeah.
Maybe that's what they're looking for. Maybe Laverne and Shirley were actually looking for a broken bottle that didn't have the cap on properly or something, and that's what they're checking for. I don't know. I've never worked in a beer bottle company, so I couldn't really tell you what exactly they were looking for.
I don't know either. I've always wanted, I live in Colorado, and I've wanted to go take the free tour they have of the Coorie, not far from where I live here, but I've just never gotten around to doing it. So, maybe there's like a ton of Laverne and Shirley's that are there watching the things go
by. Very possible.
Maybe they have guard towers like they do in The Great Escape. I don't know.
It's been 40 years since the Laverne and Shirley, 40 plus years since the Laverne and Shirley credits. So it's possible that they've automated everything these days. I don't know. But I'm now going to put you on a fact finding mission. You have to find that out. You can. Weeks, once you're able to get into the course factory, whether it's permitted at this point. Do you think they're still having tours at this point?
I think they had them kind of hold for a while because of COVID. I don't know if they've started them up again or not. But yeah, I mean, it's a free thing. It's one of those things that, always when you look up the things to do in Denver that are free, it says, well, there's the Coors Brewery tour. You get to walk around the brewery and they give you a few sips for free, so. Hey, yeah. But, you talked about opening credit sequences. This shot that opens this minute makes me think of one of my favorite opening credit sequences. The first shot, I went, oh my gosh, it's the opening of the Hogan's Heroes opening, because I used to watch that all the time. It was one of my dad's favorite shows, and they used to show it in reruns on WGN in Chicago, and it opens with a guard tower. And, the searchlights and things like that. And, of course, Hogan's Heroes, I always think of because that was the go-to show whenever there was a rain delay for a Cubs baseball game. If WGN was showing the Cubs game and there was a rain delay and it just was long, they'd cut to Hogan's Heroes. So seeing that guard tower made me think, oh, it's a rain delay at the Cubs game.
Yeah. I just pulled it up, and first of all, I do see the connection that you're making. I mean, but there, in the Hogan's Heroes, it takes place at night, not today, and you have the guard,
right?
With the searchlights working, which will happen later in the movie. We will have that, but that's very interesting that you're bringing that up. I mean, we've discussed a few of the past episodes about the connections between various POW movies and TV shows. I'm assuming that but what is Hogan's Heroes based on? Do you know?
Oh, I'm trying to remember.
It's a movie from 1953.
It's Stalag something.
Yes. Just start counting. Stalag 17.
17. I was going to say, couldn't remember.
Right. Psylocke 17, but, which is one of my favorite movies. It's such a great movie because it's like this one. It deals with serious situations, but it's very light. And Hogan's Heroes took it one step further and just made everything into a complete comedy. You know,
Hogan's Heroes probably took it several steps further.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen an episode of Hogan's Heroes, so I couldn't really remember. I mean, obviously, I recall as a thing reruns, you know, on, you know, when they were on during the day, you know, you'd get home from school and that would be, you know, I'd have, you know, in the '80s, you had Hogan's Heroes, you had Gilligan's Island, you know, the Munsters, Brady Bunch, Adam's Family, you know, that all of those shows were the ones that we would get to sit and watch all day. You know, like for me now, it's very interesting that, you know, when you have like all these Nickelodeon shows and they're shows from like from 20 years ago where they're considered classics. And I'm like, come on, like, Saved by the Bell is not a classic in my mind.
Yeah. Well, and that's like all those shows now from, you know, 20, 25 years ago, which, you know, for goodness sake, we're talking about things like Friends, Dharma and Grace, or Dharma and Greg, you know, and those shows that were on during the 90s. And I think about, man, yeah, the shows that were that age when I was a teenager, you know, are those things like Hogan's Heroes, the Brady Bunch, et cetera, et cetera. And we used to watch those all the time because they played them in reruns. But my kids, they don't see these old shows show up in reruns. They don't get that
correct,
vast TV knowledge like we got.
Because for them,
we grew up in such a great time.
My two sons are watching right now Friends and How I Met Your Mother. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, these are shows that I watched, you know, during first run, and they were fun watching the first run. Obviously, it's fun rewatching them also, but I don't consider them. Those aren't the type of shows that I would say, oh, those are classic, you know, reruns. From my perspective, that is. Obviously, you and I are on the same page with when it comes to this.
Yeah,
you know, it's just funny thinking about that. You know, but then again, I think about it also, and I say, okay, you know, when we think about movies that came out 30 years ago. Or 40 years ago, even, because now we're coming up to, you know, about 40 years ago. And just to think about that when we saw Raiders, when it came out in 1981, you know, movies that came out 40 years before that were, that actually came out before this movie takes place. Okay, we're watching, right now we just...
Yeah, Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz and stuff like that, yeah.
Exactly. So it's just amazing thinking about the way that time, you know, plays, I guess you could say in some ways plays tricks on us. Because, you know, for us, I know I can speak for you on this, was one of the highlights of our childhood of watching a movie in the theater. You know, and to think that the distance of time between now and then is the distance of time between then and, as you mentioned, Gone with the Wind and stuff like that. That's just absurd.
It means we're old, Rob. We're old. Yeah, it's.
I refuse to admit that I'm old. I'm still young at heart. You know, I still.
I have to. I turned 50 in a few weeks, so I'm like, oh, this is the thing that makes it feel real, I guess.
The fact that Raiders is 40 years old, you're saying.
Well, no, turning 50. Yeah.
Well, as I say, you know, I don't have a problem getting older because it's much better than the other alternative.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Especially
you're talking about reversing an age like Benjamin Button. That's what we're talking about here.
Well, the truth is, I'm a big fan of Benjamin Button, but that's not something that I would either. That's a little too frustrating going against the grain with everyone else, especially when you don't understand why that's happening. So, yeah. All right. Well, we should probably get along in this minute because we've only talked about first. But if this is a look at what the next, you know, the rest of this week is going to be like, it's going to be a fun week. So then we go back to Hiltz and Hiltz is looking back and forth between the different guard towers to Goff, who's next to him. And he goes, well, the next step's going to be a bit tricky. And Goff, who, for me, this is really shocking because Goff knows him. He's already made 17 escape attempts. He knows what type of guy he is. And his reaction is you're not really going to go out there, are you? Meaning, wait a second. Are you trying to escape here? Like, what's the idea? You have an idea that's going. I think Goff is a little too happy there. You know, I think that's what I don't think, you know, maybe he's happy that he got shot down and is right now in the middle of a prison camp. I don't know, you know.
Well, he kind of quickly tries to help from this. He's like, so I was like, I'm going to take a walk. You go ahead and get yourself shot. Maybe I'm going to take a walk.
Yeah, exactly. I don't really want to be a part of this, you know, that type of thing. I mean, something that's interesting in the book, it actually mentioned. Have you a book that this is based on?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so it's based on, obviously, you know, this is based on a true story, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm now confusing myself. It, in the script, it actually explains things a little differently, because they actually mention previously why Hiltz is known as the Cooler King, which is something that's never really mentioned in the movie. This was something that obviously got cut out of the original script. There's obvious reasons for it, because the scene is pretty extraneous, but you know, they still want us to understand why he's actually considered the Cooler King. And they mentioned there that Goff has a conversation with another one of the characters, which is named Mary Vale, who never shows up in the movie. We don't know who that is. I have no idea who that is. He looks out and Mary Vale says to him, "Oh, who is that? Who is that chap?" And Goff says, "Oh, that's Virgil Hiltz from Nebraska, the Cooler King." And Mary Vale goes, "What? I beg your pardon?" And he says, "Oh, in our last camp, Virgil logged more time in the cooler than all the rest of the prisoners put together." So again, this isn't a phrase that really, you know, a conversation that needs to be in the movie, but it would shed a little bit of light as to why, you know, we find out at the end of the movie, you have their tags of who they are. You know, it says that he's the Cooler King, but throughout the movie, he's never mentioned as being the Cooler King, even though we obviously know that he spends the most time of anyone in the cooler, even more than Ives.
That's a nice title too, the Cooler King. I mean, you know, it makes me think, like, you know, if, you know, maybe someday in this imaginary world after the war that he goes on and starts a successful business, you know, making like styrofoam coolers for people to take out on Memorial Day weekend. And he's literally Cooler King, you know, like Abe Froman, the Sausage King of Chicago. Well, this is, he's the Cooler King of Omaha, Nebraska, whatever it is.
That's right. That's a great idea. Maybe he went into air conditioning, or maybe he dealt with.
Oh yeah, could be air conditioning.
Dealt with freezers or you know trucks. You know trucks that deliver frozen food. You know, there's a lot of options.
Or he's the guy that invented like the little, you know, he could have invented the little fan that you attach to a bottle, you know, and that's his quote unquote cooler because it cools you down. It could be any number of things.
These are some great things, Todd. That would be really good. So basically, at this point, as you mentioned, you know, Goff basically turns to him and says, "I think I'm going to go take a little walk. I don't want to be seen with you. You've spent too much time in, you know, incarcerated in the cooler. I don't think I really want to stick around with it." Did you notice that Goff has something attached to his lapel?
No, I guess I didn't notice that.
It's really strange because it's a pen, or it could be a bullet. It's just very strange that he's walking around with that. It's not something that you would think a prisoner is going to be walking around with. Either way, I mean, if it's a bullet, obviously there's no reason why he should have that. And if it's a pen, you'd wonder why he puts his pen that way. You know, like, and what does he need a pen for? What is he keeping track of? You know.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he's notes on his palm or something like that as they go about try to figure out their plan. I don't know.
Or I mean, he just as he said in the last minute, you know, that or last week he mentioned that he found one other American in the camp. So maybe he's writing down the names of the Americans.
There you go.
Oh, Henley. That's right. All right. Well, moving along. So we get a next shot of all of the Russian prisoners. Who last week we discussed about the little brawl that Cedric and Haynes created as a diversion and allowed Danny to jump into the group of Russians. So I mean, one of the things that Tom mentioned to me before, you know, being sent to the cooler is that he found it very interesting in that you can see a big difference in the way that the Russian prisoners are acting and looking as the way that the POWs are.
Yes.
For the most part, are somewhat happy, you know. They're, you know, maybe they're happy together again. I mean, there's many explanations as to why they would be happy. Are they happy because, you know, they're maybe because they haven't been shot? There could be many reasons why they're happy.
Because they're in a big budget movie. Yeah, that's what it is.
That's true also. And the Russian prisoners don't look as happy, even though it's funny because the Russian prisoners are all given weapons. you know.
Yeah, the Russians have these huge, I mean, like the size of the saws. I'm like, what are they in Sequoia? What are they chopping? This is gigantic.
Well, no, we know that they're chopping down the trees.
I know, but that one guy at the front of the line has this saw that looks like it would take like three guys to operate the thing. It's gigantic. Yeah. But yeah, you're absolutely right that the Russians are just very dour and their heads are all hanging down. It's like they're like the guys at the beginning of Metropolis that are just lockstep walking into the factory, back and forth swaying as they go into right. to the factory at the beginning of that movie.
Right. It's funny actually. The Russian that you mentioned, like Brendan Gleeson.
He does. Oh my goodness.
Well, we found another movie that Brendan Gleeson was in before, you know, let's see, Braveheart came out in 19, so this is 42 years earlier. 40, yeah. Wait, no, did I just do my math wrong? No, 32 years earlier, 32 years earlier.
And, you know, I don't want to get ahead of things on you here, but one thing that strikes me is just how different the Russians look than, you know, Coburn and Bronson when they end up in the line. For Coburn's like Goliath compared to he's like, you know, how tall was Coburn? I looked it up. He's 6'2". I mean, he looks huge. Little old gentlemen, these Russian gentlemen that are in the line. Coburn sticks out like a sore thumb.
We are jumping a little bit ahead, but he does put like a interesting cap on his head to try to fit into everybody. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that. It's just a few minutes, or actually just a few seconds from now. I keep forgetting that we're doing this minute by minute, so therefore it's every episode is dealing with mere seconds of things. Yeah. Right. Yes. So as soon as the Russians start moving along, so you see Cedric, which is really funny. He was just in the middle of a fight. And he quickly, you know, puts on a jacket and runs to go catch up. You know, just, I don't want to miss out. I want to be there part of them. And then you have the Russians walking by two by two, and then he just jumps in. And he has this, as we said, he's got this ski cap on, which makes him look like he's about to go rob a 7-Eleven. Yeah, no, it's just really funny. Yeah. Is it coincidence that he just happens to move at this, get into the same line as Danny does? You know, it's just, you know, he's like waiting. Okay, where am I going to go? And I'm going to go next to someone else who I'm going to be recognized being next to.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think, you know, should have been like, dude, come on, give me some space here. Get away. You're spoiling my racket here. Get lost.
This is my hiding place. Move.
Exactly. Move. Yeah. What? Of course, Bronson, though. I mean, it's Charles Bronson. Come on. He didn't even need to say anything. He could have just turned and given, you know, the squinty-eyed look and, you know, been like, hey, you know. You shouldn't be here. Get lost, man. This is my gig.
Well, one of the things that we've always been trying to notice while watching this is when you see the different prisoners in the camp, you should try and find the different things that they're actually holding. Because, you know, we found some really interesting things that these prisoners have been holding that just don't belong there. We found a guy carrying a guitar at one point. We found someone with a trombone. But if you look here, right after...
trombone?
Yeah, seriously. Wait.
I missed that totally. I played the trombone in the high school band, so, you know, I mean, you can use a weapon, believe me. I explored all those possibilities.
Well, why do you need a trombone as a weapon when you're given an axe?
Well, I don't know. I guess I can make it look more believable. I know how to play the trombone, so, you know.
There you go. That's true. So in this minute, when Cedric, so you see a POW with a very bright blue uniform, including a blue hat, and he's holding a knapsack in his hand, which again makes me wonder, and I've wondered this so much over the few weeks that we've been doing this, and through the rest of the movie also, there's a lot of points where you wonder this. It's like all of these characters are meant to be Air Force members. Therefore, I would say 99 out of 100 of them jumped out of a plane. Okay, how do they have some of these things that they have, you know, and they all are able to, they almost all have hats. Okay, you think that, you know, it's interesting that they're able to somehow come across all of these interesting things out of nowhere.
Well, you know, those flight suits, you know, they have those big pockets on them with the zippers and stuff. And it's a well-known documented, those pockets could hold a trombone. I mean, it could. Come on.
That's true.
Be honest.
But you're in your jet and you just got hit. And the first thing is, okay, which pocket do I put my trombone in?
Well, I mean, it would be for me. I can't speak for everybody, but you know.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe you actually played the character who's with the trombone.
You're on to me. What can I say?
Okay. All right. I got you there. So he's just carrying this pretty big knapsack and makes you wonder, you know, where he got it and what he's got in it. It's in, it's shown it. If anyone wants to actually take a look to see what I'm talking about.
I wonder that about this whole movie and, you know, just about any other prison movie and things like that. I'm always wondering where do they get some of these things? You know, I recognize there's often a thing of, oh, they get things through the guards or they get something like that. But there's sometimes where I just think, really? I don't see how, you know, even the worst guard would have let that slip through. But I don't know. You got to do those things in the movies, I guess.
To make it interesting. Right, closing out the minute, and basically we see trucks moving with the trees. So now we actually get to understand what the Russians were doing. They were cutting down these trees, which, you know, they're pretty big trees too, as you said. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense, but it just still baffles me that they still are allowing them to carry all of their all of these dangerous weapons. Because come on, axes, saws. I think someone has a hammer. I mean, these are things that they could do damage. They probably won't live very long after they do their damage, but still.
The thing, I mean, as I watch this movie, I sit there and go, well, yeah, I mean, you could take a swing with that axe, but then I'm thinking, yeah, but there's 10 guys with machine guns right around the corner over there. So, you know, yeah. But.
Exactly. And then the minute jumps back to just getting to see Danny and Sedgwick while they're waiting in line, and Danny starts scratching his head. And that's pretty much the end of this minute. Do you have anything else that you wanted to say about this minute, Todd?
No, I think we covered it. I mean, there's a lot going on in this sequence there. Kind of a couple of different things that are going to pay off here in the next couple of minutes.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that later in the week. I hope you're willing to come back later in the week.
Oh, I think they twist my arm, yeah.
Because Tom's in the cooler till next week, so, you know, and going to have to have someone to talk to this about.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So do you want to tell everyone how they can get in touch with you, how they can contact the Forgotten Filmcast or Todd Liebenauer?
Oh, of course. Well, yeah, you can find the Forgotten Filmcast on, you know, iTunes and all those other places. My blog is Forgotten Films at ForgottenFilmcast.wordpress.com. And I'm on Twitter at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z.
All right. Great. So anyone wants to get in touch with us, you can, with me or Tom, you can send us an email at thegreatminute@gmail.com. You can visit our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. You can shoot us a tweet on Twitter at GreatEscapeMXM, and you come and talk to us via our Facebook group, The Cooler, which Tom's in charge of that this week. He's doing a good job there. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Tally-ho!
Tally-ho!